We're talking with Sean Stone, filmmaker and co-star of the TV show Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura. When we come back, we wrap up our conversation about his movie Greystone Park and then get into TV business and some of the stories that he's pursued in that venue. Stay with us. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Sean Stone about his movie Greystone Park, based in a mental health facility, mental health hospital in New Jersey that has stories that go way, way back. I have not mentioned this, Sean, but I was born in New Jersey, right in that general area, and I have never spoken about it publicly, but my family has stories about strange stuff that go back many generations, and one of these days I'm going to write that stuff down, but I'm not quite ready to do that. So it's I can tell you that the people who live in that part of New Jersey, they all have beliefs to one degree or another about strange things, the kind of things that you pursued for this movie. Now, you were telling the story that your father had seen something on a camping trip. I guess that was probably helpful to get him to participate in the film then, right? Since he'd had an experience?
When I was a kid, that was kind of his favorite story to tell me, was what he called Crazy Kate. And he called, he said Kate was, and he retells the story very nicely in the film, but he used to tell me that Crazy Kate was a lady who had killed her own kids because when she, for some reason, she went mad. No one really knew what happened to her, but she killed her own children. And she used to wander the mountains of, I guess, the Adirondacks. We went to camp. And so, you know, it was legend that she'd come across a bunch of campers one night and cut all their heads off. And this is like a ghost story that they used to tell each other when they were kids camping. So my dad opens the film relating that story. And he had told me that was his little boy. So I wanted him to tell it on camera. And then there's the Billy Lasher story, which was the escaped mental patient who Alex raised. Claims was he was a real guy that he kind of created a backstory for him, but he said he'd come across a mental patient with a gas mask who looked horribly burned, living in the abandoned mental hospital of Greystone, and he created the idea that, you know, the backstory was the guy had been born there in the hospital and had was just, you know, he basically burned the place down, and so he still wandered the halls. So between Billy Lasher and Crazy Kate. Some, you know, the idea was that these stories, and the shadow people, of course, the shadow people phenomenon, which I had never heard about until I went to Greystone. But next thing I know, I'm back in L.A. after breaking in for the first time and asking my friend who practices witchcraft, Egyptian witchcraft, I said, what are these shadow people? She goes, oh, well, there's a lot of different interpretations of shadow people. One is like what Carlos Castaneda talks about with flyers. Almost like projections of old sorcerers who would basically bury themselves and then project their shadows out of their body in order to feed like vampires and sustain their bodies, which are in hibernation. So that was like one theory about it. And obviously there's the idea that they're interdimensional beings that are coexistent with humans. I mean, there's so many different ways of thinking about shadow people. But the point was that I put them into the mix and said, well, let's assume that shadow people, like shadows, are fear. Like, they're the dark side of ourselves. Our shadows are like the dark part of ourselves that's always with us. We can't escape. And let's say that when the soul dies, it carries over the negative side. Sometimes lingers, or like the shadow can linger behind. And let's say the positive, the pure part of your soul moves on to another dimension or to heaven, let's say. But what if the dark side lingers behind? And, you know, like a shadow, it keeps moving, looking for another source, looking for some other body to take over. So then, you know, the psychic vampire phenomenon, the idea of feeding, so that these shadows are feeding on our fear. We're going through, like, the energy that we're emitting if we're fearful. Then these shadows are feeding upon us as we're going through this journey into the hospital. So it's like it's a very subjective experience as you're going through this place all alone, feeling nervous as to what you might encounter. You know, your nerves, your energy might sort of create things to happen. Door slamming, things falling by themselves, shadows moving by themselves. You see, the more you see this, the more you're going to become afraid. So the idea of the film was that as the characters go along, you know, it's like step by step, they're seeing, hearing more and more, until finally those fears from the opening do manifest. And
as a filmmaker, you can do... I'm sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, continue.
Yeah, no, you go ahead. You were going
as a filmmaker, you can go anywhere. I mean, you can stake out your ground, you can develop a theory, and you have the freedom. It's your artistic vision. As an investigator, and I realize the Ventura Show is not a news documentary, so to speak. I mean, you take some liberties because it is a TV and reality-based TV show, but you have to be careful about not boxing yourself in any one theory, right?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, even, you know, in the nature of, in the spirit of Greystone, I think that what we wanted to do was to present the audience with something that was subjective, that you can watch and frankly come to your own conclusions about, you know, because I don't want to tell people what to believe. I think my only job is to, you know, whether it's a filmmaker or investigator, to try to tell you or relate to you as best as possible, the audience, what I've experienced and, you know, my feelings about it, my theories, but never to force you to believe, you know, what I'm going to tell you. And so I think Greystone helped really translate it properly, very well to my work. That's part of the reason why I got picked up to do the work on conspiracy theory with Jesse and his son Tyrell.
Yeah, I was wondering how that worked out. Describe it. And how is it that you're able to do this separately? I would think once you tell them about Greystone Park and that spooky old building, they'd say, that should be for our show, not for your movie.
Well, the thing was that Greystone had been completed at that point. We'd finished shooting Greystone, and we were in the process of distribution, which takes quite a while. But at that point, in 2011, I had finished the film, and I was available to work. And they loved the fact that I was into that world. And I, of course, was advocating going to more of these kind of asylums, looking into the MKUltra aspect, you know, the government operations. Are they still doing black ops? What are they doing to mental patients? I would love to know more, frankly, about that side of the theory. If, you know, the idea that the government has an occult bureau. The NSA, you know, just like the Nazis, remember, had their occult bureau of delving into the paranormal.
Yeah.
And the Aryan history, for example, going back to Atlantis, all these things that they were studying, going to Tibet. We have our version of the occult bureau, and I don't necessarily know the names, but I know that in the NSA and you know, related, they have these bureaus that do this research and deal with, obviously, as we know, remote viewers and whatnot, psychic phenomenon. They're fascinated by it because I think that as you feel, like there's reality to it. There's something else out there. We are a very small. We are working within a very limited parameter of dimensions of perception. You know, of knowledge. And, you know, if we know that, then you don't think the government's all over this. So that was always my argument when it came to things like time travel on the conspiracy theory TV show, which was, you know, at Princeton, we were talking about time travel, and this is undergrads at a university, so you don't think that if undergrads at the university are talking about time travel, that the government's investigating it or doing experiments with it.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier the Collins elite, and it might sound crazy that there's a group of people who look at these different phenomena and primarily look at it through a religious prism. I mean, these are fundamental religious folks who see all this stuff, UFOs, paranormal, psychic research as evil, as inherently evil, satanically based, and to believe that a group like that exists in our government, it might be hard to swallow. But I'm pretty sure myself, based on things I've been told by people who travel in those circles, that it's real.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me about your role on the show. You seem to be the guy I mentioned in the intro who gets the tough assignments. Is that by design?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that's the character that was created. I mean, they wanted me to push the envelope, obviously, because I was the guy who would talk about the Illuminati, who would talk about the occult, you know, occult things, secret societies. I have more of a book knowledge, but also, like you, I have people who contact me or I'm in touch with, you know, who claim to have that relationship, you know, in the higher echelon or with the the eyes wide shut world, let's say, where you know, truly the eyes are wide shut once you enter that realm of the parties and rituals and sort of secret knowledge.
There's an article in the recent Atlantic Monthly that includes an interview with Jesse Ventura in which he advises people, well, look, about the show, you know, you got to take it with a grain of salt. He's not asking us to believe everything literally. It's almost like he was winking at us a little bit. And I know that these are serious topics, very serious, some of them. But it is a TV show. You do take liberties with this stuff, right?
Oh, well. I mean, to this day, I have people asking me on Facebook, what'd you hear in those tunnels in the Ozarks? And it's like, you know, that was one of the more far-out things because, you know, the Ozarks is not where the Illuminati is hiding out. You know, like, let's just be clear. The Illuminati does not hide out in the Ozarks. The Illuminati, whatever the Illuminati means, and this is a very, you know, this is obviously a very blanket term. I think Illuminati is an easy way of just sort of generically naming the power elite, you know, not going into the factions, because I think there are factions that are warring historically. I think I frankly think it has to do with interplanetary conflict that's come here to this planet. But you know, this is ancient bloodline kind of stuff. You know, when the reason for the eugenics and the focus upon bloodline is because I think bloodlines have to do with different star systems and different seedings of the human race. But I'm not versed enough to talk about that. So when the Ozarks story was, you know, the Illuminati building this mega house. And no, I mean, there's all kinds of underground bunkers and facilities, and I'm sure what we know about the Ozarks is nothing as far as, you know, even what I put on the show. Why is it called Ozark in the first place? Oz is obviously like what the Illuminati love, that word Oz, as far as brainwashing is concerned, right? The Wizard of Oz. And then Ark, so it's the Ark of Oz, you know, as opposed to the Ark of the Covenant, right? So there's something maybe to that word Ozark, but what they're actually, you know, what the reasoning is behind any kind of operations in the Ozarks historically to this day, I don't think we even grazed the surface on you know, in the show. But what I felt was that we did just begin to make people wonder and start to ask questions. I mean, that's the gateway drug phenomenon. Like, what you can do with the show is you can simply show people, look, you know, the Ozarks are a hub of some strange activity. Go find, you know, investigate for yourself. If you have information, send us information. I love that people do send me information through Facebook, you know, because I'm always curious to learn more. I feel like every day the more I learn, the less I know, because I just feel like there's so much information out there, and that our knowledge is so limited, and I just get reminded of that every day.
I had the pleasure of meeting Governor Ventura. He came, I think it was during season one. It's now at season three, I think. He came to Las Vegas to interview me about Area 51, and we kind of hit it off. And they finally, the crew had to tell us to be quiet and cut it out because we were yakking on and on. And then he did the show, and you know, he asked me some questions about the theory that he had that he was pursuing. I told him why I thought it was wrong, but of course, that's the angle he pursued anyway. And the next thing I know, he's got meeting some guy in a secret van out in the desert. And I understand it's a TV show. I understand, you know, you jazz it up a little bit, you make it dramatic. It's the manufactured drama that bothers me about it, I think, if I had a bone to pick with it, because you got pretty dramatic topics to begin with. And I just wonder if at any time it seems too much for you or too much for him, you know, the mood lighting and the secret meetings out in the desert kind of stuff. Is it too much? Comes with the territory.
For me, I mean, for me as a filmmaker, I appreciate conspiracy theory. Just, you know, from the point of view of telling a story and keeping it dramatic. Ultimately, you know, the biggest, you know, pitfall is for my taste, just that we can't, you know, if they are theories, you know, we are limited by what you can do as far as breaking into places. Like, for example, if it was up to me, I would have broken into the damn house in the Ozarks, the one that they said was Illuminati house that the guy had built. It was the biggest house in the, you know, in America, right? I would have looked to broken into that place and seen what's going on underground. Because
yeah, you can't do that. You can't do that.
Fortress, but you can't do that. You can't break in there. You can't break into Plum Island. You can't go into, you can't break into Area 51. So, you know, at the end of the day, you're constantly hamstrung and feeling, well, what's the point of this whole investigation? It's literally just to tell people, well, they could be building, you know, reptilian gray hybrids underneath us in Dulce, but we can't get in there. You know, meanwhile, I was so frustrated in Dulce because I wanted some kind of guide to at least give us an example of potential entryways into a base. You know, I think there's a base in Dulce, but like, I was like, can't someone find one person out here who might be able to show us a potential entrance? At least, you know, this is ridiculous.
Well, I guess the idea is that you push the edge of the envelope when you can. You stir the pot, you let people know what's going on to a degree, and then hope that you can pick it up at some other point.
Yeah, exactly. Same. And that's, you know, that's what it's really about, is as far as that show was to stir the pot, I suppose you'd say. I mean, same with Greystone Park. It was like it's to stir people to think there is something out there. And I think everyone has to, at the end of the day, rely upon their own common sense, their own experience to know what, you know, what it means to them. You know, no one knows for sure what the heck shadow people are. Scientifically, we don't know, you know, what's going on with these other dimensions and what we call demonic activity or satanic activity, and why people are doing rituals. I mean, at the end of the day, what we do know is that people within the elite, within the power elite, families, bloodline families, are doing what is called satanic rituals. But really, you know, it's old Babylonian witchcraft, sorcery. You know, the problem is the Catholic Church put its own spin on these things. Even though there's a lot of black magic rituals going on inside the Catholic Church itself. But the point is that this predates Catholicism. This predates the Church. This predates Judaism. You know, this is the origin of Kabbalah. It's really, you know, the origin of our civilization. If you go back to Babylon and Egypt, those forms of sorcery and witchcraft, and they're still around. They're being practiced for a reason. Why? It cannot just be form. I can't believe that it's only for the purpose of form and formality that you would go through with these massive, you know, rituals and creation of portals, and they tie into time travel. It ties into other dimensions and other space, you know, spaces as far as, like, you know, star systems and whatnot. It ties into, you know, the creation of these entities that are called, you know, by the Christian Church, they're called demons. You know, that's much closer to the reality. But, you know, obviously, I'm not closer to knowing exactly how it works. I don't know the magic of it. I don't understand the nature, which is magic, by the way, I believe, is just high science. I think it's very advanced science that most of us are not given privy to, because the masses are more concerned with giving us fluoride in the water and keeping us dumbed down than educating us to the true power, which is within every person, man, woman, and child. Every human being is innately endowed with tremendous power by the Creator.
Well, I'm with you on this. I think a lot of things that we describe as paranormal now are could become science later on if we understand more about it. One more point about Jesse Ventura, and then we'll be going to the phone lines here in a little bit. On the Area 51 show, when he came to Las Vegas, he's telling me, look, you really can't cross the line, huh? No, you can't do it. He says, well, I'm going to do it. I'm going to cross the line, see what happens. What will happen? I told him, well, look, they will arrest you, and if you go too far, they'll shoot you. They're not going to shoot me. I'm Jesse Ventura. And he had every intention of going up there and crossing the line. And somewhere along the line, cooler heads prevailed, because they would have thrown his butt in jail, you know?
Yeah, well, that was fun. They made a lot of drama about the standoff there, as you saw. But, you know, at the end of the day, what can you do?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's, you can make your point without having to get thrown in the pokey, that's for sure. How is the show doing? It's I read in this one interview that Ventura thought that somebody was trying to subvert it, that there are some of the episodes that get so sensitive, dealing with Federal Reserve, I think, for example, or FEMA, that they don't get aired again. I'll tell you what, we'll answer that question on the other side, and we'll open up the phone lines. My guest is Sean Stone. We're talking about the TV show Conspiracy Theory. We're talking with Sean Stone, filmmaker, and one of the co-hosts of Jesse Ventura's Conspiracy Theory TV program, opening up the phone lines with your calls. Coming up at the top of the hour, Brad Olson joins us, but we have a lot more to go before that happens. Stay with us and hope you're calling in with your questions. We'll be right back with more Coast to Coast AM. Back with Sean Stone. Sean, before the break, I was asking about how the show is doing. You can never quite tell. I mean, you got a lot of viewers. You're in your third season, but I heard Jesse Ventura saying, it still seems like there are some people who'd like it to go away. What do you think?
Well, you know, when I was brought on the show, I was under the impression this was the final season, the third season. When it was initially picked up, by True TV, they had not, and it never showed an interest in going beyond this season. So I was told that, there had been some pressure due to second season's episode on martial law and the concentration camps, that that's why the third season was moving more into that direction of, the outer limits, I guess you could call it, as far as, episodes on reptilians and dual set Twilight, the time travel, the Ozarks, and the Illuminati. So, because they were going to the, more in this direction of, supernatural, paranormal, and high, very sort of, I guess you'd say, high concept science ideas, that it was never intended to go beyond that. And, it has not been picked up at this point, so I'm not sure what Jesse wants to do as far as creating a new show or just letting it go and retiring. I have no idea, but definitely conspiracy theory as it currently stands, there's no fourth season. But one thing that I can say is that Tyrell Ventura and myself wanted to kind of keep doing some work, so we actually have a show coming on Buzz called Buzzsaw on Blip.tv. It's an internet-based talk show that should be airing on Wednesday. Not sure yet what the time slot's going to be when once it locks in, but it's on Blip.tv and it'll be on YouTube thereafter. So it's an hour, like a 45-minute talk show where Tyrell Ventura talks about kind of our own spin. We call it, obviously there's the Buzzsaw, so we have our own spin on current events, and then we interview a guest, and then he and I kind of chat about what the guest said and recap some weekly events and whatnot.
Okay, well, send me a link for that when that's up and running, and I'll let our listeners know about it. We'll go to the phone lines now. What on the wildcard line, Riley in Texas. Hi, Riley. Riley, are you there? Riley, if you're there, you got about 1 second to go ahead and ask your question. Hello? We're moving on. Is Sandy on wildcard two? And Sandy, somewhere in the Southwest, are you there? All right. I'm uncertain here about what the problem is. I'm sorry, what? All right. We're having some problems here with our phone lines. Let's try east of the Rockies. Lois in western Wisconsin. Are you there, Lois? Hello?
I called my great grandson had seen shadow people from the time he was a little tiny kid. He's 19 now. And about a month ago, we both started saying a prayer that he would stop seeing them. And I guess that he stopped seeing them. I just talked to him last night. But what causes that? Why would a little baby see them?
Oh, interesting question. Thon, any idea? Sean, any idea?
That's very controversial as far as, what the gift is. As far as, for example, with the Greystone Experience, Alex Wraith, who's my co-writer and co-star on it, he's seen shadow people and all kinds of creatures and whatnot since he was a young man. And I, on the other hand, I'd never, to this day, I've seen shadows, but I've never seen a shadow person or anything,
Well,
like a ghost.
he says that he sees them, they're black and they're white and they're all different colors. And one time they said to him, kill, kill, kill. But he said, I just don't pay any attention to them. I just forget about them and watch TV or something.
Lois,
Yeah.
what age? How old?
He's 19 now.
And when did he start, at what age did he start seeing it?
Oh, when he was just real little. He told his mother about it, but he didn't tell anybody else because she said, don't tell anybody or they'll think you're crazy. So
Yeah.
he told me a couple of months ago, though, and he hadn't told anyone else.
We don't properly treat people as though, we don't properly treat the spiritual realm. Frankly, that's one of the reasons why I went to Iran, and I'm working, off and on, but there's a documentary on jinns that we're working on, and jinns are, of course, what we call genies, but they're kind of like shadow people. And, they said that the Muslim tradition is very clear that they're real, so they don't treat you like you're crazy if you talk about them. It's just, it's something that exists, and they teach you prayers, and you know, it's more a spiritual, it's considered a spiritual, you know, a spiritual understanding as far as realizing that's real, those dimensions exist. And, you know, you're not a crazy person for experiencing that.
No, I hope not. No, he's a really good kid, but.
Lois, appreciate the call. Appreciate the call. You know, it's tricky business when a little kid sees something like that. On one hand, you can say they're too young to have been influenced by the media. They didn't see it in a movie. On the other hand, you know, you got to wonder if they're seeing boogeymen like under the bed or in the closet kind of a thing. It's just exaggerated fears of the dark. But we're going to go back to the phone lines and try a first-time caller, Chad, in Maryland, and hope that he's there. Chad?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Great, yeah. What's on your mind?
All right. Great. I was going to talk to Sean about Dulce. I heard him mention it. And, you know, I'm very familiar with Phil Schneider and Bill Cooper, and they've mentioned that numerous times, Bill, in his book, Behold a Pale Rider. I was just wondering if you saw anything strange out there or any vibrations or any lights, anything underground.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you know, we did not stay very long. We were there for about a day and a night. And, you know, the way it was done was just not, it was just not properly, you know, presented in the sense that we, you know, really weird stuff happened. I mean, the native tribe that we were working with was supposed to show us, you know, basically some potential entry points. They ended up taking us to a location where there was like a, what is it called, like the water was running out, drain, basically a storm drain. But our guy said that the storm drain had been turned off, and now it was running again. So we couldn't walk and try to explore that entry. And then they started, the Indian Native Americans started bickering between each other, saying, well, you can't even be here. This is not, you know, you're not supposed to be coming to this property, but we thought our guy had already established that we'd be coming here before. So there was, it was very weird the way that things went down. You know, and ultimately we were not able to like really get anything concrete. Our psychic Anya Briggs, you know, who is a friend of mine, and she's had quite a few, you know, experiences over her lifetime. And she, you know, she thinks that she's in my lab and whatnot. She was out there really freaking out when she got there from the point that she arrived at the location, just having like a sensation of reptilians and some kind of hive mind all around her closing in. It was, you know, she was having a very traumatic reaction. It's on the show. If you see that episode, that was real on her part. But from my end, I just, you know, I wasn't there long enough to have any kind of experience. So, you know, what to make of it.
I'll throw in 2 cents, Chad, as a colleague of mine, Dr. Colm Kelleher, spent many months there, back and forth, and got to know the Jicarilla Apache tribe pretty well, and interviewed many of the tribal leaders and elders, heard all kinds of stories about weird stuff there, dating back hundreds of years. Never found any evidence that there's an underground base, but certainly plenty of evidence that this is a paranormal hotspot. And it can, that these kind of activities, including animal mutilations and UFO type sightings and alien beings, continues to this day. Thanks for the call. West of the Rockies, Brenda in San Francisco. You have a question for Sean?
Yes, I do. Good evening. Sean, I would like to know, I have to admit, I have never seen your show, but everything that you say sounds very interesting, and some of the questions that have been asked. And my question to you is this. Have you, in your travels and visits with people, known of lights like sparklers in the dead of night appearing in the ceiling of people's rooms or buildings, where they go into a frozen state, which happened to me one night? Can you explain that? Do you have an explanation to that incident?
You saw sparklers, you say? Like a sparkler?
Yes, I was at home in my bed. I woke up. I remember waking up and having an incredible sense of fear. And I remember looking up at the ceiling. Now I'm completely frozen. I can't move. I can't scream. I can't do anything. And it looked like someone had taken one of those sparklers that we, during 4th of July, that people light up. You know, they burn to the end of this stick. Well, it looked like someone had taken one of those and it just went wild in the room on the ceiling. And finally, I was able to scream my sister's name, but I have to say, it took everything in my body to do this. It was so, I can't explain it. Anyhow, she came running in and flipped the light on, and it was, you know, it disappeared. But I was so frightened, and no one's ever been able to explain what this was. It I don't want to say it haunts me, but I think about it every so often.
The visually is not the same, but it sounds very much like what's called a shadow attack. And I think George probably heard a lot about these, but people waking up with paralysis, sleep paralysis. And it didn't happen to my brother, actually, because I had a shadow living in my room for a certain period of time. And my brother was laughing about it. So I said, okay, come sleep in the room and see what happens. And what typically happens, he woke up, couldn't move, his eyes opened, he couldn't scream, but he saw this shape lingering over him. And there was a shadow, shadow shape. And it felt like it was, kind of feeding on his energy. And then, ultimately, he was able to, to breathe again normally and go back to sleep. But that's usually what's described as a shadow attack. Sometimes people feel like they're being pulled. Sometimes they see alien creatures standing in the room. I never heard sparklers before, although that kind of sounds like some pictures I've seen of almost like portals. Like I've seen photographs. They look a bit like nebula, like star nebula forming. And they're very like multicolored, and you see kind of shapes or creatures coming through. So, that's what it sounds like to me. Is that, especially if it's a negative experience? The truth is, if you feel tremendous fear, it's not a good thing. It's not a friendly creature. Usually entities that are spiritually, present, that are spiritually comfortable and they will not scare you. They will try to put you in a condition of being calm or feeling that, that they are not here to hurt you. They'll make it clear that they're benign. So that's not a good feeling if you're feeling scared.
I should tell you, Brenda, that there are non-paranormal explanations. Sleep paralysis, it's not exactly uncommon, but the part about being paralyzed and awake and seeing sparklers, that's a little different. But thank you for sharing your story with us. On the wildcard line, William in Temecula, California. Hi, William.
Hi. Thank you for having me on.
Sure.
Sean, hello. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
You are absolutely legendary on Jesse Ventura's conspiracy theory, and I bought your movie. I believe it was your debut, Greystone. I've watched it 5 times, and it is the freakiest, greatest film. I cannot believe he did it with one camera. Absolutely amazing. I was kind of wondering for a question how you felt about. Teleportation and time travel, some of the people that you've come across.
Yeah. Well, when it came to teleport and time travel, we had Andy Bisaggio, who was the main character on Conspiracy Theory. And, his story obviously has been maligned by many people because he doesn't have necessarily the documentation or enough proof as far as they're concerned. Brett Stillings also worked on the program with Andy as far as, it was the Mars part of the project, and as well as teleportation. But also, teleportation within the United States, from Jersey to New Mexico and back and forth, and then also to Mars. So, Brett can confirm it, and there were some others who have confirmed Andy's story. But, I think the funny thing about the teleportation and time travel is that I have come across people within the occult realm, let's say, of doing rituals, certain, let's say, the Illuminati stuff, like doing the rituals with, that are centered around places like Rockefeller Estate, people who've also told me that time travel is very real, but they've experienced it from the point of view of ritual and ritual creation of portals and consciousness, and how they believe that they have traveled to different periods in time and spent even a week there or whatnot. and they've seen their whole lifetime flash before their eyes, including, you know, previous lifetimes. And one guy who I would say is an insider said it's basically a mixture of the collider, the CERN collider in Switzerland, that technology mixed with a kind of harp resonance. When those two are connected, there's a creation of portals that he's experienced firsthand. So I think the time travel stuff is fascinating from the point of view of consciousness, but I believe it exists in multiple ways as far as from the point of view of you know, how our consciousness can travel across time and space, and then how we can physically do so. You know, because as we know from relativity, we can at least travel to the future, right, without... you know, without violating the rules of Einsteinian physics. But then if you go beyond Einsteinian physics, I think theoretically we could go to the past, and I'm open to that.
William, thank you for the call. I appreciate the call. We're running out of time. I should mention that one reason you mentioned about this guy, Andrew, who was in your time travel program, I think one reason that that you had credibility problems or people questioned him is because he said he was in this program that teleported him to Mars, and the other guy who was in the class with him was Barack Obama, right?
Yeah. but, you know, stranger things have happened because I think Obama was CIA. He was, he was controlled from before, long before his presidency, probably from, his college days at least, if not earlier.
There's a lot of people who would agree with you that maybe he was put on this path for a reason.
Yeah.
Sean, you'll come back, of course, and let us know when your program is going to be online, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. The Buzzsaw with Tyrell Ventura should be coming out this week. Greystone Park is currently out on DVD and iTunes and YouTube, and coming out on Netflix in the coming weeks. I think their schedule is a little bit unclear at Netflix, but Greystone Park's out there. And then also I should tell you guys that we have a citizens hearing on disclosure coming up at the National Press Club in April, April 29th, for about 5-6 days.
What are you doing? Are you going to be there to testify, or what are you doing?
No, not me. I'm working with some of the creators of it who are close friends of mine, the Paradigm Research Group in Los Angeles. Steve Bassett and company. It's their event that they're bringing witnesses to testify regarding people like Richard Dolan, and Edgar Mitchell is backing it, the astronaut, to testify about the UFO and ET presence, and basically the government's knowledge of this. We want we're asking for disclosure, essentially, so trying to get as many witnesses as possible to talk about what they know and what they've seen in order to get a sort of a shift for people, citizens, American citizens, just demand their government reveal the truth to them. Stop hiding the knowledge that we feel is owed to us.
Well, Sean, we'll give it all the attention we can. Appreciate you being here. Good luck with your movie, Greystone Park. Good luck with the TV show, and I hope to have you back on the program many times to come.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, George.
Thanks a lot. See ya. Brad Olson, the author of Future Esoteric, The Unseen Realms, comes up next. Stay with us. Much more to come.